Greetings, everyone. Welcome to the Delta Flyers Journey Through the Wormhole with Quark, Dax, and their good friends Tom and Harry. Join us as we make our way through episodes of Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
Your hosts for today are my fellow Trek actors Armin Shimerman, Garrett Wong, and myself, Robert Duncan McNeil.
Hello, everyone.
For the complete and amazing and incredibly entertaining and educational version of this podcast, please check out patreon.com/the Delta Flyers. Sign up to become a patron today and get all that exciting bonus material.
There you go.
Hey, guys.
Hey. Hi, Armin. Hey.
How are you? How are you guys doing? You all right?
Good. We're all right. Good. I'd like to show everybody something.
Uh-oh. Yes. Oh, that's the new sweatshirt.
Lovely.
Wow. It's gorgeous, isn't it?
Yeah, it's gorgeous.
Overgunned and overpowered.
Defiant.
Yeah, she's a tough little ship.
Yes.
Yeah, we feel like we may have missed out on that.
Yes. That's
just a tough, it might have seemed, maybe we should have had a tough little ship, or she's a tough little ship, but I like this one still.
That was the introduction. Then the she's a tough little ship came on later. Yeah, we hadn't seen those episodes.
We hadn't seen that yet before we designed the design. So before Rebecca designed the design. So
let's get into birthdays, first of all.
Oh, my goodness.
Let's talk about some birthdays. We've got Liz Scott on January 22nd. Happy birthday, Liz.
Happy birthday, Liz. Congratulations.
We also have Alex Mednes, our Australian Patreon patron, on January 25th. Happy birthday, Alex.
Happy birthday, Alex. Many happy returns.
Happy birthday, Alex. That was sort of a weird Cockney mashup.
It was a little Cockney. Birthday, Alex. I love it.
We also have Jameson Eisenberg on January 26th. Happy birthday, Jameson.
Happy birthday, Jameson.
Happy birthday to Jameson on January 26th. Happy birthday, buddy.
Jameson, you probably know that you have the same first name as Jonathan Frakes' son.
Oh, yes. Okay.
And here's the other thing, though. Armin, if you ever get a chance to see Jameson on a Zoom call, he is a dead ringer for Will Wheaton.
Really?
It's freaky. It's sort of like, what? Yeah. Oh my gosh. And he has the same name as Frakes' son.
As Frakes' son. Now, Frakes calls his son J-Mo.
J-Mo.
Yeah. J-Mo. I wonder if Jameson, we're gonna check in with you, see if you like it. Maybe we'll give you the
call
same
you J-Mo.
Name.
I don't know. That you J-Mo. Can't have two J-Mos. Why don't we use the end of his word? He could be Meso instead of J-Mo. Hey, Meso.
Yes. Hey, Meso.
Meso Eisenberg. I like that.
Excellent.
At Planet Fitness, we're declaring it. This is the year of getting stronger. And future stronger you can get started now by saving $28 or more when you join today. You in? We have all the best-in-class equipment you could ever need to keep stepping it up. And you can work out your way on your time at any convenient location near you. Most open 24 hours. So let's do this. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more. Just $1 down, $15 a month. Cancel anytime. Deal ends January 31st. See Home Club for details.
Let's start into our limerick and then haiku synopsis of this episode.
Yes, Robbie? Sir. Here we go. I've got a little poem, a little creative art. I like to call my poems art.
Oh, all right.
Yes, they're very, very.
I call them Frank, but you can call them art.
show us your newest artwork, Robbie McNeil.
Here's my newest artwork. It's the Bajoran Gratitude Fest. And relationships are put to the test. There's some super awkward couples. Thank God there weren't thruples. These latent feelings should probably stay repressed.
Well said. Well
that
said.
That sounds like how Armin feels about this episode, basically.
Yeah, okay. The whole episode should have been repressed. Yeah.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. All right. Here's my haiku for fascination, my haiku synopsis for fascination. Luxana returns. Everyone is amorous. Cause? Xanthi fever.
Okay. Excellent.
Nice.
Thank you.
Excellent. Thank you. You captured it.
I felt like
singing. You did sing it. And you did sing it, which proves
you are a singer, Garrett. Before we started recording, Garrett was talking about how he can't sing,
I
that
know.
some actors can sing. Garrett can sing.
Well, yes, to be specific, I had a cameo request for me to sing a wedding song of a couple for their anniversary.
And you spent like an hour
doing
working
on it.
Takes.
Well, I was trying to mimic, because I do impersonations, right? So
yeah.
I was trying to impersonate Christa Berg singing Lady in Red, but the actual chorus of Lady in Red, which you did earlier very well, it's up there. Just
Yeah.
getting through that whole chorus is very difficult, I think. So, but thank you. I appreciate
We
it.
need to practice. We're going to give you some voice lessons. We're going
to
get
I
you
would
ready
love to
for
take
your
voice
next
lessons.
cameo
I
so
know.
you can just sing it.
I want to rock it. I want to be able to, yeah.
When they do Star Trek the musical, they'll need you to sing,
Thank
Garrett.
you. You're right. I
Exactly.
think we should just write that. The Delta Flyers should put on a production of Star Trek the musical. I think we should do it. We should all sing in it. And because you have a singing voice too, Armin. Yes, you do.
No, that's why I live in LA and not in New York anymore.
Well,
So
Armin
then
did a
we'll all
musical.
take.
He did
Oh,
a
I did
music. I
several
remember
musicals. I did
several
several
musicals.
musicals.
Oh, so then you have a singing voice then.
Yeah, you
No,
did. I did several musicals. I don't sing.
Yeah. So
That's
would
you sound
you?
like Bob Picardo. Bob always says, "Oh, I can't sing," and then he comes out with
No.
it's like Mr. Opera.
His
Yeah.
Italian opera.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you
Okay, so you
know,
get
Armin,
Bob.
I just thought of something. I was this close to making my Broadway debut with Renee
Oh, in
in
City of
Big R
Angels?
No, Big River.
Big River.
Big
Oh, yeah.
Big
Yeah.
River. I went in for that original production for Des
Oh.
McAnuff, the director, 6 or 8 times.
Oh, Lord, you
And
were
I
there.
heard at the very end, it was me and I can't remember the guy that got the part. And I wasn't in for Huck Finn. I was in for a very small part, but I was this close, and I wanted to do that so bad. But
Oh
so I
my
would have worked
gosh.
with Renee.
Yeah. You would
Wow.
have known Renee before you
Yeah.
knew Renee, basically.
Right.
That's cool.
I never saw Big River. I did see his next
City
Broadway
of
music. I
Angels
saw
is
two
the.
actually of his Broadway musicals after Big River. One was City of Angels, which he was brilliant and brilliant.
Great show. Love that show.
What is that one about?
It's
It's a
a
gumshoe.
noir. It's a
Yeah.
gumshoe noir
Okay.
show, and brilliantly conceived. I had a number of friends in the show. I didn't know Renee then, but I went to see my other friends, but I did see Renee because he was in it, and
Yeah.
he was quite good in it.
I
What
love
year
that show. I saw it a
was
couple
that that he,
times.
sorry guys, what year did he do that?
88, 89, something like that.
Oh,
87.
maybe I know I saw it, and I left New York in 82, so but maybe I went back to visit.
You must have gone back, because I came to New York in 82, and it was,
Post 82.
think when I was on the soap opera. I think it was in those years. I'm almost, yes, absolutely it was, because who's the actress that did one of the Star Trek movies, a theater actress? Oh, well, anyway, this actress was on the soap that I was doing, and that's one reason I went to go see it, is because she was doing it. And so that was between 85 and 88, I think, or 86, 89, somewhere in there. Anyway. What
Okay.
do you have etymology?
Oh, yeah, I do.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
I love
Enough
it.
about our favorite
I know.
musicals.
Yeah.
Here we go.
So the word fascination
Yes.
comes from the Latin fascinationem. Fascinationem. You know, I'm Jewish. I never learned Latin.
Yes.
And it means the casting of a spell, sorcery, or enchantment. It also
Oh.
means the state of being under a spell, which I think is applicable to this episode. And three, a fascinating quality, irresistibly attracted influence, which again refers to this
It's,
episode.
you know what I find interesting? So these writers were writing back before the internet was the internet. They couldn't
Yes.
go on and do a quick search.
No.
AI couldn't give them an answer. They
No.
had to know this, or they had to go to the OED or something.
Well, that's where I go. I go to the OED.
Yeah.
But yes, and they're writers. Writers are
Yeah.
wordsmiths, that
True.
knowing about words is what they do.
True. True. It's the perfect title. It's more perfect than I expected with your
It is
etymology.
one of the few things that is perfection in this episode.
Right. So full disclosure, Armin. This is not Armin's favorite. Let's just put it that
No,
way. This
it's
is not
not.
his favorite episode.
It's not, but I just, okay, can I just read two things very quickly
Yes,
to the two of
please
you? All
do.
right. Ira Stephen Bear says this show originated insofar as the writers felt we needed a light show because we were coming up on past tense part one and then part two, very, very heavy shows. He describes the finished episode as dangerously wacky and says in some ways it works very nicely and in some ways, you know, end quote. Now it says the plot of this episode bears a striking resemblance to Shakespeare's play, A Midsummer Night's Dream.
That's what I said.
And I know that Armin loves Shakespeare. Let me finish reading this. Indeed, the writing and production staff all watched the 1935 film version of the play starring James Cagney as Bottom, Mickey Rooney as Puck, and Olivia de Havilland as Hermia during the early development stages of writing the teleplay. So that was what they had in mind. Does that change your thought process about this a little bit?
No, to quote my friend Wally Shawn, they failed miserably.
Oh my goodness.
We should get through the thing and then we'll talk about our summaries. Yeah. But I agree with you, Armin, yet I had fun on the ride. I think the idea, the Midsummer Night's Dream, transporting that story into Deep Space Nine could have been one of your greatest episodes ever, in my opinion. It could have been, but I don't think it's quite structured in the way that would amplify that and elevate the idea. It just sort of tumbles out sloppily, but I still enjoyed it. But
And if I may make a little disclaimer as well, of all the plays Shakespeare wrote, the one I'm least happy with is Midsummer Night's Dream.
Wow. It's one of my favorites. So there you go.
Of course, it's everyone's favorite. But I have, if I never see that show again,
what's your favorite Shakespeare play?
Yes, tell us that.
Oh, there are Tempest. Usually my answer to that is whatever Lear? Play I'm doing at the time, whichever one I'm doing at the time is the one of my favorite. But if I had to really choose, if there was a gun to my head,
yes,
I think I would say Richard II,
which
many people don't know about, and a beautifully written play with a central character that is gorgeous. Mm-hmm.
So this episode is directed by Avery Brooks, and it seems like he's getting a lot of episodes very quickly. It seems like this is his fourth one, maybe. I don't know at this point, but it seems like he's doing a lot of directing.
Well, Avery is a director, has directed not so much TV, but had directed a great deal of plays, is a teacher at Rutgers, and where he taught theater. Mm-hmm. So it seemed like a natural transition. And when you're number one on the call sheet, you get to go in ahead of the line. Yeah.
Yes. Yes, exactly. But it is quick. It is very quick.
All right. Story by Ira Stephen Bear and James Crocker. Teleplay by Philip Lazebnik. And of course, I already said Avery Brooks directed this. Mm-hmm. We have all the regular players plus guest stars, Major Barrett as Luxana Troy. Philip Anglim is back as Vedic Barayo and Rosalind Chow as Keiko. So those are our guest stars for this.
But Molly.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Molly is a co-star and not a guest star. Yeah. Co-star credit.
Hannah Hatte.
Yeah. We start off in Sisko's quarters. Jake's lying on the couch kind of upside down, which I thought was an interesting way to open.
Yes, it was.
It's kind of twirling a necklace or earring.
The Bajoran earring.
That's right.
Yeah.
He's very sad. Marta left for school. She's left. His girlfriend's left. So he's heartbroken. Sisko tells him to come join the Gratitude Festival. That's the whole point, is put the past behind you, have a new start. Jake agrees reluctantly, but he says he's not going to have any fun. Whenever a character says, I'm never going to fill in the blank, you know they're going to do that.
They're
going to
flip-flop. Yes. The flip-flop will happen.
I do have to say that upside down opening shot after Sisko came in, I was confused where we were until Jake sat up. Because I guess Jake was facing away from him. It just stayed in these tight shots. And I was like, wait, where are people in the world, in space?
Yeah.
See, I didn't have that. I immediately recognized it as the Sisko quarters. But maybe not just because I was familiar with that. But yeah.
Yeah, I was a little confused, I got to be honest. It was all so tight. And it was unconventional because he was upside down and then he rolled over, but he's facing away. I didn't know.
In this episode, a lot of people face away. I noticed that as I was watching. In this
I have an
episode, there's a
idea.
lot of people who don't, where the actors don't look at each other, and I think I understand why. But there's a lot of that in this episode where
I
people are
agree.
not looking at each other.
I think I had the same thought. I think because, as you said, Avery is a theater director. He came from the theater. Even when Avery is in a scene with Jake, he goes up, he sort of turns open to the camera as if it were on stage. And on stage, that makes total sense to do that.
Absolutely.
But to kind of compromise reality for the camera, I felt that a lot in this episode. Yeah, it felt theatrical, I guess.
Robbie, I want to quiz you.
Yes, sir.
This is the question I have for you, Lord McNeil. You have directed countless hours of television in Hollywood. Do you recall which scene you yourself used an upside-down character to begin the shot?
Yeah, I've done it quite a few times.
Oh,
But
okay.
I
In the
think
sci-fi world.
in the sci-fi world, oh, I don't know. The first thing that came to mind was on Dawson's Creek.
Oh, yeah, that's where you cut your teeth over there.
Dawson, yeah, the first episode I did of that, I think Dawson was, his father had just died at the end of the previous episode. And so this episode I directed was all about grief and resisting feeling the grief. He wasn't feeling, he just was numb until the very end of the episode. Anyway, he's lying in bed at one point, and I decided just to put the camera above him and start with his head upside down in the frame. And then as we sort of pulled out, we corkscrewed up, and so
Oh,
he
you
sort of
flipped
did,
over. Okay.
yeah.
Yeah.
And I remember that was a tricky shot because to get a crane, the crane, if you just boom up, actually starts to pull back.
I
So
see.
you have to boom up and dolly in,
I see. To keep
keep
it so it
that
doesn't pull back. Yeah.
center point. Yeah. So it's a
It's a tricky
compound
move.
move that was tough to do, but
Yeah.
yeah.
Well, I'm actually referring to an episode of The Orville, and that you had Seth MacFarlane upside down in that
Did
shot.
I? I don't
Yes.
remember.
Didn't you do the zoo episode where they were like
Yeah.
zoo? Yeah, that
Yeah.
was the one where you came up
Was
on
he
him.
upside down?
Yes, he was.
I love Upside
I
Down.
remember because I was looking at him upside down. I said, "Oh, he looks Asian upside down for some reason." And I can say that being Asian, but I just thought it was a cool shot then, and you don't recall it at all. I'm
Don't
sorry.
recall it. Well, we go to the Replimat next. Bashir is teasing Miles about being nervous, seeing Keiko. Keiko and Molly are going to come back after being gone for 3 months. And Miles is, doesn't he say something like you've had 25 cups of coffee or something like that? Yeah.
And
Had a
there's a
lot of.
shot that the scene starts with a coffee being removed. There's no face, it's just a cup of coffee
That's right.
being
Yeah.
removed from the replicator.
Yeah.
Yeah. So he's very anxious, and Bashir picks up on that. And Miles does mention that they're only going to be here for 2 days. Just they came back just for the festival. They're going to be here 2 days, and then she's got to go back for 4 months. So he wants to make the most of it. He's really, this is really important to him. So, yeah, they have a nice talk. Talk about their racquetball in this scene. Bashir says they've played 150 games of racquetball. They play a lot of racquetball when she's
They
gone.
do.
Nothing else to do, I guess.
The medical officer and the head engineer, they had nothing to do but play racquetball.
You play racquetball all the time.
This episode is important in the development of the O'Brien Bashir friendship. The writers originally wrote Keiko out of the show so they could develop this friendship. And at the conclusion of this episode, as Keiko leaves the station, Bashir throws O'Brien a racket, symbolically replacing O'Brien's wife. Indeed, the notion of competition between Keiko and Bashir for O'Brien would become a comic thread upon Keiko's return in the fourth season.
Oh, interesting.
The
Interesting.
show suffered from the loss of Rosalind Chao. She's a wonderful performer, and in my humble opinion, gave the best performance in this episode.
Oh, she's
Just
really
far and
good.
away better than everybody else's.
Yeah, we all need a little Roz Chow in our life.
Well, she was kind of the darker side of this episode.
No, I would disagree. I wouldn't say
Really?
darker. For me, it was the shining light in this episode.
Oh, wow.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, but her story of just being exhausted and
But that was real. Those
yeah.
scenes, I'm getting ahead of myself, but those scenes with the O'Briens
Yeah.
just, quibbling about, I'll do whatever you need, or no, don't do that.
Yeah.
That was so real for me. That forgive me, I'm giving something away. That is my married relationship, is trying to figure out how for me to please my spouse, and my spouse trying to figure out how to please me. And those scenes, those moments struck chords in me. I went, yep, that's married life.
Yeah,
that's married
absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely. Yeah, I love that. And we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit. I love the way that it was almost like they were walking on eggshells with each other. Mm. Well, wait, are you saying you want to do this? No, 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 that's not what I'm saying. And, you know, it is a reality of a long-term relationship is...
And an insight, and I think all of us have been there, when we go off to work, whether it's us or our spouses, mm-hmm. or our girlfriends or our boyfriends, when there's been a separation and you come back together, there is a day or two of walking on eggshells because, you know, while I was away, I got used to putting my toothpaste over here.
Yeah, exactly. Mm.
And the other person says... But we always kept it over there.
Right.
And there's a readjustment, realignment that has to take place, which I thought they nailed in this episode.
Yeah, I used to call it re-entry when I'd come back from being away working or something.
Re-entry is what you call it?
Re-entry, like I had gone out to space somewhere and it's coming back in the landing module or something. Yeah.
I love it.
All right, we go out to the promenade next. Odo approaches Kira. She's doing some, some preparations for the festival. Mm-hmm. But he approaches and he tells her he's decided to join her this year in the festival. And she seems really happy. Mm-hmm. She says she'll see him later. She says, look for me with Beryl.
Oh, That was just straight a shot to the heart, even though he has no heart as a changeling, but still, let's say goo. He had a heart. Yeah, straight to that goo heart of his. Painful.
Yeah, it was very sad. Mm. Yeah, she says, look for me with Beryl. I'm going to meet him. He's on the next shuttle. And I thought, poor Odo. A couple things in the scene, though. At one point, some background actors are carrying a gong behind. Yeah. Did you see the gong? I found it so distracting. I'm like,
what's
really?
Happening? Why?
Like, why is there a gong right? I mean, I get it. It just seemed distracting to me.
I remember in some episode, maybe it was this one. I remember we hired some Cirque du Soleil.
It was this one.
Performance.
Yeah.
It was this
I
one.
Think it was.
So then, Avery was showing off as he should.
Yeah.
Some of the Cirque du Soleil performers.
Yeah. And we actually on Voyager hired probably the same Cirque
same
du Soleil performers
du Soleil
for the
another
episode of The Thaw. Yeah.
Yeah.
Michael McKean.
I have some thoughts about the Cirque du Soleil when we get there.
Okay. All right.
Yes, there are definitely some.
Did you have Robbie? Did you have another comment on this scene though that you were going to
talk
about?
Okay. So at the end of the scene,
yes,
we see the musicians getting ready behind Odo.
Correct.
And if you have forgotten, I'll remind you how much I hate Star Trek music. When they play alien music, I just find it dreadful. I love the score underneath, but whenever they compose a Bajoran music or Vulcan music or whatever, Klingon music, it's horrible. It's just horrible music.
I don't find it that bad, but okay.
Isn't it likely that when they were shooting this, of course, they were not playing, that the music is added later on? In
yes.
order,
oh,
I mean,
yeah.
that's what usually happens in my recollection, is if music is needed and you're supposed to be playing, that they don't play. They look like they're playing, but there's nothing coming from the instruments.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's interesting with music on screen with union rules. You cannot hire just a background actor to play an instrument.
What?
You have to hire a union musician who knows how to play that instrument.
You're kidding me.
No.
I had no clue. Wow.
So when you see a band or even this group of musicians, because later on Odo's dancing and Luoxana comes in. I can't say her name.
Waxana.
Waxana comes in. And they're playing these odd instruments, these sci-fi instruments, but they're clearly musicians. You can see that they know what they're doing because they're union musicians. They have to hire real
That's the rule
musicians.
That's been around. Is this a rule that's been around for decades then?
Been around for a long time.
I would say it's been around for longer than the camera has because there's a similar rule in Equity and in the musicians union for musicals and straight plays actually as well on
As
Broadway.
well in regular plays. Oh
Yeah,
my
in straight
goodness.
plays you have to hire musicians.
I again did not know that.
You play cards down below in the dressing rooms, and then they get paid once a week.
What a great job for them.
We go to a corridor next. O'Brien's pacing outside the airlock. I love this shot through the glass of that gear door, that big round door. While Miles is waiting, Kira walks up, and they're both, excited about their loves arriving. Barile arrives. Kira and Barile head off arm in arm. Keiko arrives, not so happy. She's exhausted.
Oh my
She's
gosh.
annoyed. Molly doesn't feel good either. Suddenly, Molly vomits off camera. You hear it and see Miles's reaction.
Doesn't it hit Miles? No.
Yes.
He gets vomit on himself. Yeah.
Did we see it though, or we just
No,
saw
we never
him
saw it.
look?
We never saw it.
We know what happened. It better to keep that off camera. But Molly throws up, and then immediately after that, Lwaxana arrives, and Lwaxana apologizes for, giving her all that candy.
Has that happened to you as a daddy? Lord McNeil, have one of
Yes,
your
been
brethren,
thrown up on?
have one of your
Yes.
children.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. As baby babies, there's the spit up. There's that typical stuff, but then oh
But
yeah.
when they were little Molly's age, one of them threw up on you, right?
Yo, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah,
Okay.
it happens.
All righty. Let's continue.
Those darn kids. Yeah, and I just realized like Lwaxana is starting problems for everyone as soon as she arrives. Like, we'll learn later on about the Xanthi fever or whatever, but
But
yeah.
she's
She's
always been a
already.
figure of chaos in all of Star Trek. She's always been a figure of chaos. She always things start to happen because of her arrival.
She's the catalyst.
She is.
The chaos catalyst. I like
Exactly. And
that.
I want to thank her character because her character was responsible for my first appearance on Next Generation. So I was a messenger that she had sent.
Interesting. Thanks, Majel.
Yes.
Thanks.
Oh,
Thanks for
and let us
Armin.
say this right now. Majel Barrett was the glue when I started on Star Trek that brought all of the casts of all the there were only two at that time, but the casts together. One of Majel's purposes in life was to make everybody on Star Trek comfortable and into a huge big family. And I for one was enormously grateful for that. She always was she threw parties all the
Through
time, always invited
parties,
the casts. And
I
we all got to know each other, unlike at convention, well, like at conventions. We got to know each other because of the parties that Majel threw.
I still regret Robbie went to one.
You,
I
I
still
went to one
regret I
party.
never went to one. I was
Well,
invited
I
to
wish
all
you
of them, and
had.
I
I
should
wish you
have.
had.
I
You should
really should
have.
have. Dadgummit. I went up to that house when Rod was basically auctioning, not auctioning off, but
Selling it
giving
off.
away. Yeah, he was giving away a lot of his parents' stuff. Like, he had already sold all the things of value. Then there was other things. So I went up and I saw the house, but it was at that point, it's too late. She's gone, but I do have Majel's golf putter. I have that with me. She
Oh,
was an
you
avid
do?
golfer. Yes. I have Gene Roddenberry's golf shoes, and I have a few of their
Well,
books actually about
the
golf.
house was on a golf course. It was in Bel Air. It was the golf
Was it on
course
the
was
golf
right.
course? Oh, I
I
didn't
don't know
know.
if it was on it, but it was
Okay. It's close. It's
I'm
close.
very close.
But Rod sold that house, of course. So,
Oh.
yeah, it's a bummer. Okay.
All right. Well, Majel shows up. Agent of Chaos shows up, and we know we're in for an adventure. In the security office, Odo's briefing his
Randy. It's Randy
it's
again.
Randy, his stand-in, right?
Yes, his stand-in.
Yes.
And with that, it's a regular scene of a normal length, and they
Yes.
couldn't give Randy one word,
Thank you.
a line.
Thank you. Thank
Give him
you.
a
He's
line.
talking to him for so long. We're all, as the audience, we're all on bated breath. Say something, anything, one word, and he deserved it, but he didn't deserve it. Now,
Absolutely.
they did do it
Don't
later
understand.
on. Later on, many years later, they gave Randy some lines.
Really? In like the final season? I mean, this is the time that they should have put it in. Oh, it's
And
upsetting.
Randy could have done it easily. I just thought, really?
It's
Isn't
odd.
it like you've got a ton? You do have actually quite a few expensive guest stars, but you could have Because you get a bump in salary if you say something.
It would have been a few hundred dollars. It would not have been broken the
And it would
bank.
Have generated residuals for him as well.
Oh, totally.
And it would have made the scene better.
That's right.
It makes the scene awkward when you've got someone who's just standing there nodding without saying, okay,
or I, sir, copy
or,
that,
I,
whatever.
Sir, anything.
Mm-hmm.
And why is he sitting in Odo's chair?
I don't know.
Odd.
Why?
I think it's because he was going to be, Odo was about to walk out.
Didn't Odo say in the previous scene, says to Kira, says all of my deputies, well, he's not Bajoran. Randy's character is not Bajoran. So I guess that makes sense. Okay. He's the only deputy left. He said, because Odo says all my Bajoran deputies are going to take the holiday.
I'm
going to
take the day off. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yes. He's basically giving him security instructions while Odo's going to be at the festival. He wants his officer to know what to do.
To monitor Quarks at all times.
Yes, exactly. Yes, 3 or 4 times a day at random intervals, just to let him know that I'm thinking about him.
Yeah,
very funny. Luoxana enters, hugs a stunned Odo. He is not expecting this.
No.
I love how she tells the security officer to please have some manners. Skedaddle out of here, please.
And he doesn't say yes, ma'am, or anything.
That's what I'm saying.
You know, even there, we could have used something.
Well, Randy leaves. She informs Odo she came to see him because she's worried he must be in pain.
Yeah.
After finding his people and learning that they're leaders of this awful dominion, mm-hmm. It must be so hard. She wants to go relax right now, just alone with him.
She
gets right to it.
Yeah, she wants to help him.
But he's like, no, I want to go to the festival. I got to go to the festival.
I do like the fact that Luoxana, in one of her lines of dialogue, says, when Odo says, what kind of help do you mean? Luoxana says, a sympathetic ear, a shoulder to cry on, a lap to melt in, which is a reference to the prior episode, which I love about DS9 because things are tracking here. They literally refer to something that happened that we've seen Luoxana and Odo trapped in that turbo lift and him having to regenerate or revert to his liquid state and into her lab. So she's referring to that. And that's something we didn't have on Voyager, which I wish we did.
I know we didn't really track
very rarely.
Continuity. Well,
it's the nature of the difference between the two shows.
Yes, it is.
We boldly stayed in one place.
That's
and
right.
So
we boldly stayed in one place.
You really did. You were very bold.
And so you couldn't get away from the fact that things, you know, you were stuck there, so you had to remember what happened before, whereas you guys gleefully moved on from planet to planet. So,
Can we make a t-shirt that has the station and said boldly staying in one place? Please.
Yes, that's very funny.
Let's do that.
It is funny.
Okay. Yep. We'll write that
All
down.
All right. She agrees to go to the festival with him and again says, well, after the festival, we can relax in private. And she ends the scene by basically saying, you're never going to be alone again.
Aw.
And his face, his reaction to that was great. Well, they get into a turbo lift. We do see here as they get in the turbo lift, Luoxana kind of has a headache, a stabbing pain in her head. So we know, whenever a character in a show says, I'm not going to have fun, they have fun. Whenever they have a headache, you know that's a problem. And the other thing I always notice is whenever a character coughs, they're going to die.
Really? I will look for that in scripts from now on.
Whenever I see a character, you know, coming up and going, I just want to ask you a few questions. They're dying. Like, you don't cough on, because if it happened by accident, the editors would cut it out. It's intentional. The cough means they've got some deadly disease of some kind. So
I love that, Robbie, because
me too.
In Doctor Who, there are these angels that make you anyway. It's don't blink is what the thing that you hear a lot in Doctor Who, and in Star Trek, it could be don't cough shirt. That's the don't cough shirt.
Don't cough. Yeah, you're gonna die if you cough. We go to Kira's quarters next. She's stretched out on this chaise lounge.
Very seductive.
Very seductive. But my first notes are awkward. Chemistry question mark?
Now I'm going to step on some toes.
Yeah.
Please, I'll step on them too.
Are
I've
you
been
stepping or
watching.
stomping?
I'm stomping, actually.
Okay. Thank you.
I've now watched several episodes, and of course, in the past, watched all the episodes of the
Right.
relationship between Kira and Brian.
Yeah.
And to my mind, there is no chemistry between those two
No.
actors at all.
Terry
None.
agree. Terry agrees with you. She said it on other episodes. Terry's like,
Oh my gosh.
there's nothing there.
there's nothing there, right?
No.
I'm going to go even further. I'm going to say this is the worst coupling on any Star Trek series.
It's pretty bad.
There's nothing worse than this one.
If we remember Kira's look to Frakes, to Riker in the past episode,
Yeah.
that's my note. That's my note. It's the same.
Exponentially,
Exactly. She doesn't care about Belial.
Well,
Oh
that
my
was just
God.
the previous episode.
Right.
Yeah, in this scene at the very end, when she, so basically he's trying to have sexy time in the scene. She gets up in the middle of being seductive when he
Yeah.
comes over. She suddenly is like, oh, no, I gotta go to the festival. She does this thing with Dax where she sets out the scrolls. He does comment so that we set up his point of view about Dax. He's like, you are so different, you two.
Oh my gosh.
Yes.
There's,
And
it's not a coincidence that both Burial and Boring begin with B. Okay.
and by the way, I saw Philip Anglim in The Elephant Man on Broadway.
He was amazing.
Phenomenal, fun,
Yes.
like life-changing
Yes.
play. And he was phenomenal. So
Yeah.
yeah, I find this puzzling how
I'm not
he's.
the
Critiquing
Elephant
him.
Man, he had no romance that I
That's
remember.
exactly. There you
True.
go. There you
True.
go. As the Elephant Man, he had no romance. And I'm not
True.
critiquing him as an actor. I'm just saying the character of Brielle and the character of Nana Visitor are just not destined to be together. There is
No.
absolutely zero spark between those two. I'm
Yeah.
sorry.
Well, as she leaves to go meet Dax and put the scrolls out, she gives him another kiss. And that's where I wrote Armin. She gives him another awkwardly short kiss goodbye. It was it, they barely even like their mouths barely met.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, oh, that's not the same kiss as Riker in the last episode.
No,
Exactly.
no.
Exactly.
Like Frakes grabbed her and she fell into it. And
Yeah.
yeah, this was, yeah. Maybe that's why it's so awkward for her, for Kira now, is because she just had this experience
No.
with Riker. No,
No.
I'm trying to
We know
find
what it
some.
is. There's just
Yeah,
no chemistry there.
there's
It's
none.
just not.
Poor Burial. Okay, we go to O'Brien's quarters next. Keiko comes to sit with Miles. She's exhausted, but she does say Molly's feeling better. Bashir's medicine's working. And Miles says, great. They've got a babysitter. We can go to the festival. Or he also starts talking sexy time. Maybe we can just stay locked inside together. And she's like, she doesn't want to do any of that. She wants to go to sleep. And then he gets annoyed, and then she gets annoyed. And it's a little of this like they're misinterpreting or, getting defensive with each other. They're walking on eggshells, as we talked about earlier. He finally just says, tell me what you want. And she says, no, I want you to decide. So he says, okay, let's go to the festival and wear that great red dress that I love. And she says, the red dress? Really? It's so tight. And then he gets mad again because she just said, tell me what you want. And he did. And now she's going, no. So yeah, it's a
It's
classic.
welcome to married life. It's
Exactly.
exactly right on. It's exactly right.
Yeah. The dialogue here is it's fabulous. It's good writing
Yeah.
for a
And she
couple.
does
Yeah.
an extraordinary job of selling it as well. I'm in this episode, I'm all in favor of Rosalind Chao.
Yeah.
And this storyline absolutely has a clear
Yes,
arc.
it does.
Can I
Very
read
does.
clearer? Ira Stephen Baer commented that the episode was the show that now and then runs the risk of pissing everyone off. It was a show that we had developed for the second season and never got around to doing it. What I liked about the episode is that I thought that Avery Brooks did some nice work with the direction. Another nice thing was the Keiko slash O'Brien relationship. I think it was one of the most interesting threads we've ever done on the series, and some of the most real dialogue between two married people who have expectations, but at the same time can't quite sync up with each other. I remember when we were watching dailies, everyone was uncomfortable because it really did strike close to home. Everyone had something in their lives they could relate it to, how a relationship could seem to be bad over such small things, what seem to be small things, but are not really. I thought it was a nice human story. I thought Jake was very sweet with Kira, wanting to go out with her. Dax going after Sisko was kind of fun. I didn't think the Barayo stuff worked that well. The show was better than it had any right to be. That's Cyrus' comments on that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah, but clearly he also, like you, Armin, really liked the Keiko and Miles story.
Yeah. It's the best part of this episode.
Oh, by far.
Their relationship.
Yeah. You know who does like this show? Jonathan West. This is one of DP, Jonathan West's favorite episodes due to the fact that director Avery Brooks allowed West to try some new cinematography techniques. There was more light on the set than usual. Color was emphasized much more so than in a standard show. All the characters were bathed in a subtle pink light to enhance the mood. Balloon foil was used in the background of many shots to get random sparkles. And purple, a color forbidden from the Star Trek color palette due to its association with old science fiction artificiality, was allowed to be used. The color purple. Wow. Who knew that was a...
I didn't know that. That's
Verboten color. What?
Interesting.
Wow. Yeah.
Yeah, there's no Starfleet rank that has purple. There's red, there's green, there's yellow, but there's no purple. Interesting.
Yeah.
Just purple pros.
Exactly. We go outside into the promenade again, outside the shrine. That gong that I saw being carried by is being hit by this young child.
Oh.
Awkward. The kid looked terrified.
He looked
terrified to be shooting a shot. It didn't look like part of a story. It just looked like, it was weird. After the gong moment, we kind of go through some Cirque du Soleil people to eventually arrive at this podium, the stage. But the Cirque du Soleil felt very forced to me. It felt like it felt like a play. It felt like presentational, I guess, is what I mean. You know, it didn't feel like this Cirque du Soleil is part of this. The energy of a celebration. It felt like the Cirque du Soleil is part of a shot.
What I thought Avery was doing was that they'd hired these people, these talented performers, and he was going to show them off. And here, look at what we hired.
Yes.
And you're right. It has nothing to do with the story, really. It's just we've hired them and now we're going to show them off.
Yeah. Kira's on stage. She does this fancy ceremony, which is very reverent this moment. She pours these liquids together into this vial that has a nice blue color. And then the fire comes up. And now they're going to burn all these scrolls to let go of the past. Start a new chapter. So that's how we start. Then you see Luoxana get another headache. You see Barayo get a headache. He's near her.
Uh-huh.
He walks by. Barayo gets a headache. And then you see him look at Dax and has kind of a creepy smile.
And Dax sees it. There's a quick response back and forth.
Yeah. And then it pans over to Jake. And Jake also, we saw him so morose and so sad before.
Yeah.
Suddenly Jake seems to brighten up. And he has his headache. And then suddenly he's super happy. So it's a happy headache.
What we know from the end of the episode, are they saying that Jake has a latent itch for Kira? Is that what we're meant to believe at the end of this episode?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I think that is a tricky part of this episode to me.
Oh, yeah.
It would be different if you just said these are random. It's the first person you see after this projection of a...
Right. And that's Midsummer Night's Dream. That's Midsummer Night's Dream. The first person you see.
Yeah. That feels like that would have been cleaner because at the end when they say, well, there has to be some latent attraction. And Sisko, I think, and we're jumping to the end, but Sisko's like, wait a minute, what? And he goes, yes, subconscious, very subconscious, not even aware. But yeah, I think Jake's got to have some crush on some level, even subconsciously.
With all the people that are on the promenade celebrating... Why Kira for Jake? I can understand Kira for a lot of people, but we've never seen anything like this. There's no, we've never seen, that I know of, we've never seen any looks between Jake and Kira. So.
No, and you're right. He got affected by the fever, and the second he did, the first person he laid eyes on was Kira. That's what I
Well, we
assume,
don't know for
right?
sure if that's the
I don't
first
know if
person.
that's, I don't know.
Oh, we don't know that.
Because later
Okay.
on, when Bashir says there has to be a latent attraction for it to work, he could have looked at 10 other people that he didn't know and wouldn't have felt it until he landed on someone where there was a subconscious attraction. And then it's gonna go.
Okay.
Well, yeah, after Jake gets happy, Kira, catches up to Barile, who's looking around for something. She asks him, "What are you looking for?" And he says, "Oh, I'm just looking." And then Jake finds Kira, wants to talk to her in private, he says. So they sit on a bench. Barile seems distracted in the background, wanders off. Jake tells Kira he loves her. Well, at first he says, doesn't he say, "I'm in love with an older woman," but I don't know how she feels. And Kira thinks it's Marta. Kira's like, just tell her, tell Marta.
So he does.
Well,
Just,
Jake, he says he broke up with Marta, so she's gone. He broke up.
But he said, yeah, exactly.
But he does say, "I love you, Nerys."
Man, those three words.
And
I
I'm not
don't
sure
buy.
what's more surprising. Hear him say, I love you, or
Yeah.
using the name Nerys.
Nerys,
Exactly.
exactly. Well, doesn't Sisko later on even say, like, please don't
Don't
call
call
her
her
Nerys. Don't call her Nerys. It's making me
Nerys.
uncomfortable. I like how he says, "I love you, Nerys," in a very adult, very mature way. And then he
Want to go
goes,
out with me?
"Want to go out with me?"
Like
Like a kid.
a kid. I love it.
We go back outside the shrine. Dax is reading Morn's scroll and giving him some advice. Again,
Well, that
awkward.
one I understand. Excuse me. I'm going to
Okay.
step on some toes here,
But
but
even
that one I understand.
even if he said thanks or something, one word, it would have been nice.
But at this point, the gag was that
He
everyone
never
talked about
speaks.
how much he talks and that the audience never hears him talk. So
Yeah.
that one I get. I get that.
Yeah. But on the heels of the other one, to me, this one stuck out. If this had just been the only one, I would have.
If it hadn't been a two shot, if maybe if and I'm no director, but if they just, stuck with if we got
Dax.
Morn for a second and then we got a close up on Dax, then it would have been less uncomfortable.
Well, it's a funny, it's the dialogue's hilarious. Morn, I can't believe a handsome, fun-loving guy like you could have so many problems. Just the whole fun-loving guy, because all he
Yeah.
does is sit in the same spot. He doesn't do anything other than that. So it's very funny.
I like how she says, "My advice is to burn this as quickly as possible."
Yeah, don't
Yeah.
look back.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
Barile arrives though, Mr. Charisma. And I mean the character, not the actor. As
Not
I
the actor.
said, Philip
Yeah.
Englund was brilliant. I've seen him
An
do
elephant
other,
man.
but this character is not
No.
so dynamic or anyway, he arrives, compliments Dax on the advice she just gave.
Yeah.
He says, "I wish I had a friend like you." And she says, "Well, we are friends." And then he goes, "I wish we were more than friends." And I like how, I don't know if this was Avery or if it was scripted, but you're in these close-ups as they're getting, he's getting more and more intimate.
Yeah.
And then she looks down in her close-up and it cuts to the wide shot where you see that
His
somewhere
hand.
off camera, his hand has gotten on her leg. I
Good.
thought that was fun. I like
Can
that.
I just read Armin's quote? This is Armin Shimerman's least favorite episode of all DS9 episodes.
That's published on the interweb?
It says it,
Wow.
on Memory Alpha. Shimerman, who teaches Shakespeare, has said of the show, quote, "I thought it was embarrassing," end quote.
I haven't changed my mind.
Alexander Siddig was also unimpressed with the episode, saying it is memorable for not quite pulling off what it attempted to do, end quote. So
I don't remember saying that. Obviously, I did say it, but I don't remember. And I'm glad to see I haven't changed my mind.
you're consistent,
I'm
exactly.
consistent.
Yeah, you are.
It's just, it's atrocious.
Okay.
All right, but I'm going to say
Robbie.
I have all the same criticisms,
Okay.
but I laughed and I had fun.
Thank
So
you. That
I'm going to
that's
at the
yes.
end, I'm probably going to be
Fine.
much higher than you with my
Okay,
rating.
ditto. Probably you are.
Ditto. Robbie, the musicians are back. Your favorite people in the
Oh,
next scene.
geez. Well, there was a nice, so off of Dax walking away after the
Yeah.
hands on her leg, they're on a crane, and the
So,
crane sort of follows her
yeah.
and then goes up to the next level
Yeah.
where we find Odo dancing to these three union musicians
Yes.
playing music,
The
or
union
probably
musicians.
not playing anything.
Probably
Although,
not.
to get it in sync with, they probably pre-recorded this music. So they
It
probably
could be. Did a
played it. It
playback? Could be.
played it on set, playback as the camera move goes. And then once it got to the dialogue, that's one reason they move away from the musicians so that you can not have to sync up the miming of playing a song with dialogue, because you
Got
wouldn't be
it.
able to have the playback.
I will give Renee kudos here. He looks incredibly awkward dancing. And
Yes, he
he's a very
does.
good dancer. So I kudos to Renee for looking as awkward as possible to this music.
Armin, did I hear you say that right? You said he's an incredibly good dancer in real life, is what you were saying. Okay.
Wow. Well, I love how she grabs Odo, pulls him away from the musicians, and he's enjoying this music. She pulls him away. They
And they
have
dance.
this, they dance. They dance while they're talking, which is part of the fun of it. And he runs off. He tries to escape the dancing. She follows. They run into Dax here. Odo asks if she's having fun. She goes, "Nope, I am not." Then Odo exits.
Neither am I, by the way.
Yes. Odo unlocks on an exit, and you see Dax have a headache. Uh-oh.
Oh no.
Another headache.
Armin, you mentioning Renee being such a good dancer, now it just reminds me of when Christopher Walken did that music video where he broke out and
Oh,
danced,
tap
and
dancing.
everyone was watching this going, "What? We had no clue that Christopher Walken had
Yeah,
that in
he
his
had been a
wheelhouse."
Broadway dancer. I think he was a Broadway dancer. He certainly
Yes.
was a dancer,
Yeah.
a tap dancer, in fact.
Right.
Yeah. Wow.
It's amazing what, we are amazed when we find out that the people we've been watching have other attributes that we
Yeah.
aren't aware of.
Of course, for
Did you
sure.
know that I was a tap dancer,
I
Armin?
did not know that.
I will send you a link for a video of me tap dancing
Oh.
at a theme park, at an amusement park, the summer of 1980, I think it was. Yeah.
I would have
I was a
loved.
big tap dancer. I like Christopher Walken, loved to tap
Yeah,
dance.
but prior to Kitty, all I dated was tap dancers. They were
Really?
I dated at least two tap dancers, important romances in my life at that
Oh,
point. When I was a very
wow.
young man, very young man. Yeah.
Yeah, who knew that we could have had a
Who
tap
knew?
off between Robbie McNeil and Renee Auberjonois?
And I got one of my ex-friends to teach me to shuffle off to Buffalo, but I can only do it one way. I can't
Can't
do
go
it
back the
both
other way.
ways. I can only do it to the left.
To
I
the
can't do it
left,
to the
not to
right.
the right. That's all right.
One of my first auditions when I moved to New York in 1982 was an open call for 42nd Street that was running on Broadway for the chorus call. And I got through the first cut, which was the first thing was they just had everybody do shuffle off to Buffalo, basically a time step, time step with a shuffle off to Buffalo kind of thing. And I got through the first round. I'm like, oh my God. And then quickly cut in the second round
Oh
when it got more
thank you, thank you. We'll let
complicated.
you know. Thank you.
Exactly. But I was on the stage at the Majestic Theater,
Oh
just it was an open call at the theater.
yeah.
And yeah, I
Well,
think
you
that
were
was the first
excited
time I
when,
stood on a Broadway stage, was that
yeah,
42nd Street open call. Yeah.
right.
And I'm going to brag, I did 6 months on the Majestic Theater. Was that, I remember
Wow.
Mama was there, right?
Mama
Yeah.
was there. Oh
Yeah.
my gosh. I did, that was a main stage play at UCLA when I was there. I remember Mama.
Really? I
Yes,
remember
I
Mama.
and I was I played the two small minor roles. They were trying to rainbow cast where everybody was going to be a different ethnicity. But I, was very close to playing the son, but I ended up being like a couple of other small minor
Lars.
roles.
No, yes. No, Lars.
Lars?
Lars is the father of the son. I think Lars is the son. I should know this, Lars.
It's been a while though.
It's been a while. Yeah.
Yes, yeah, it did. All right. Well, next time we get together, I'll bring my tap shoes and we can tap away. Now Quark makes, I think, is this your first appearance? Right. Yeah. Basically, Quark is a carnival barker out on the
He
promenade.
wearing a Bajoran earring. I remember it had to be enormous to fit on the ears.
Yeah, I bet. I bet. Yeah, wearing it. He's all in on this festival.
Well, he's trying to sell the renewal scroll inscription pens. This is a very important thing for Quark to get done.
Exactly.
Rob, you want to talk about those pens?
Oh, yes. Well, the pens are latinum plated.
Mm-hmm.
They are blessed by Vedic Redab mm-hmm. shortly before he passed away. So coincidentally, no one can verify if they were actually
blessed by Vedic blessed. Redab.
Yes, but I've got Ram in the back room just making them as fast as he can.
Yes.
He does say each pen is engraved with the words of Deep Space Nine's third annual gratitude festival, today's date, and a lovely portrait of the station by Ermit Zim. I love this because it's Herman's. It's short for Herman
Zimmerman.
Herman
Zimmerman. Yes.
Yes. Look at that Easter egg. I love it.
We see Odo and Lwaxana are sitting at a table. They're looking at jugglers and acrobats. Again, this Cirque du Soleil to me felt very presentational, the way the camera, like, I think one of the Cirque du Soleil guys was walking backwards, almost looking at the camera, juggling or something, or doing a ball or something.
Yeah.
Now, we have to remember, there's a reason why they hire us to perform on camera.
Yeah.
It's because we know how to work in
be
front
natural.
Of
the
camera.
Yes.
Be natural in front of the camera. Not, you know, not everybody has that quality. It's what we study. It's what we acquire. And if we do it well, they use us.
Yeah.
Yeah. Some of these performers, and I'm sure they're circus people.
Yeah. And they're theater performers. They're used to performing in the theater. That's what they do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, this sequence of Cirque du Soleil people take us to another cool crane shop up from this juggler. We see the O'Briens. They're sitting at their regular table, which I love. Miles asks her about her work. She says it's hard, but she loves it. But she does mention it's taken a little longer than the original plan. He says, how much longer? She says seven. Well, she says 3 more months for a total of 7 more months that she'll be gone.
So we're to assume she's been away for 2 months already. Because originally it was going to be 6 months.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. So she's going to be gone almost twice as long on this next leg than he expected. And he's not happy about it at all. And then she gets defensive. She mentions this guy, Zabar.
Yeah, that's
Zabar.
Yeah. This is like a conversation that I think all of us have had as in our youth when we were dating somebody. So, and when she goes, Zabar was right. I never should have mentioned it. And bing, 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 bing. That's when the jealousy, the green jealous monster Sabar. Overtakes O'Brien. Sabar. What?
Who's Sabar?
No.
Yeah, he gets jealous.
Oh, my gosh.
And he assumes, you know, what else is going on? What else are you talking about? And he tells her, you know what? I don't want you to go back. I want you to stay here.
Yeah.
And she says she doesn't even want to sit at this table with him, which I thought that was a harsh thing.
Oh, very harsh. Again, I've heard that in my past as well. And then O'Brien says, fine, go on, leave. Go back to Bajor and your plants and Sabar. See if I care, which is the last thing that he should have said. That's right.
Because
that made her even more pissed, clearly. Don't go there. And he did.
Yeah.
And I've done that as well. So,
but one of the things that I liked about Roslyn, Cullum, of course, was upset and getting frustrated. And you can see the flames coming out of his ears and eyes.
Yeah.
But Roslyn was upset, but never went over the line. To me, she walked the line perfectly of trying to stay in control and being upset with her husband. I love the way she played that scene.
Mm-hmm.
I agree 1,000%.
I wonder, I was just thinking about Roz, and I want to look it up when we get to the scene where later on Miles goes to talk to her and she's in the room and doesn't want to come out and talk to him. I want to look on the original script and see if that was scripted that way or if Avery chose to put her behind the door and not ever see her.
We're a little ahead of ourselves, but I had the same question. Was she not available that day?
It seems like, because as an audience member, I wanted to see her side of that. When we get there, I'll take a look at the original script and see how it's described.
Great. Don't forget that, please.
Yeah.
Okay.
Go back to Sabar. So O'Brien and Keiko are
Such a
They're
good
not in a good
name.
place.
Sabar.
But they're at the bar. Never mind.
Yes, exactly.
Go back to Sabar. We're at the bar.
We're at the bar.
We see Sisko finds Jake on the promenade. Sisko says he needs his help with his festival dinner that he's hosting later that day. And Jake says, "You know, Dad, you were right about meeting someone." And Sisko says, "I didn't mean Kira." He says, "You know, it's just a crush. You're vulnerable right now because of Marta." That's, you know, he's assuming that it's that he's kind of acting strange because he was so despondent about Marta.
Every now and then, there's something of value in this episode. And this little tete-a-tete between father and son, I thought also resonated as something that, yes, that is what happens. But I went, yeah, that's a nice father and son moment.
I did like when Sisko says, "You know, Kira's in love with Belial, Jake," and Jake says, "Well, it won't last." And I was like, "I'm on team Jake for this. I hope he's right. I hope it won't
I
last."
think we all rejoiced at that comment.
Yes,
Yeah.
thank you,
Woohoo!
Jake. And
Thanks.
perhaps the writers were injecting something there that they already had thought
Yes.
about. Exactly. Well,
We're
Jake runs off
done.
to
Yeah.
yeah, he runs off to find Kira, and Lwaxana has purchased a souvenir pin, and
From Quark.
she gives Odo this pen, and Odo really it doesn't want to accept it, but she insists it's her gift.
And a lovely shot. I love going from that to finding Quark at the bar, dealing with the
With
crowd,
O'Brien.
and then
Yeah.
O'Brien. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was unusually kind of long and quiet. There was no dialogue. It just sort of let them go. It went into a window, I think, and slowly pushed in. It
And
was
then went down a level to the bar itself.
Yeah.
It was a
Yeah.
nice shot. It was a very
That
nice
was a
shot.
nice shot. I think that's probably what Jonathan West is talking about. There's a lot of that kind of stuff, these very cinematic sort of handoffs and
Yeah.
but because of shots like that, they're very pretty to look at, but the whole sense of energy gets dissipated as we're looking at beautiful shots, but you go, well, okay, I'll wait for something to happen.
Something to happen for someone. This, yeah, and it was a very pretty shot, but this was a particular moment where I was like, is somebody going to talk? Is something going to happen here? Because we're just kind of getting a pan through quarks and yeah.
It's as though the script was short or something, and we had time, you know.
If you're following Midsummer's Night's Dream, are you going to then say that when O'Brien has a headache in this scene, the first person he lays eyes on is Quark at that point? So something should have happened there then,
Oh
right?
yeah, he says that. He says he's got a headache,
Except,
right?
and now we are jumping ahead. We know that that headache that he has is not the same headache.
Yeah.
But we don't know that now, though,
No, we
at
don't
this
know
point.
that
So
now.
when we're watching, I thought, oh my gosh, he's gonna
He's gonna have,
jump, Quark. He's gonna dive over the bar and kiss Quark.
yeah, it
But
was a bit of a misdirect, I thought, in a good way, you know, because they had kept repeating that same bit, that it was a nice misdirect. You expect something to happen, but
It
then
didn't
it doesn't
happen. But
happen.
it depends on, again, latent a latent
Yes.
attraction. I don't think there was a latent attraction
Attraction.
between
Miles
O'Brien
and
and
Quark.
Quark. I don't think so.
Okay, fine.
We had a lot. I mean, there are a lot of bromances that happen on our show, and
Oh,
we have at
yeah.
the end of this episode, we have Bashir and O'Brien going off to play tennis.
Absolutely.
We have the Quark Odo relationship. You know, in a sense, we have the Sisko Dax relationship,
Yeah.
which is, if we remember that Dax was a man, there's that as well. So, and it calls him the old man all the
They
times.
all the time. Yep.
Armin, who invented or who came up with the whole Ferengi women are at home without
I did.
clothing?
It was me.
It
I
was
did.
your
Yeah, it was my idea from the very
thing?
beginning. Oh,
Really?
yeah,
Really?
absolutely.
Wow.
Oh, no, of course not.
I was believing you for a second. I was like, wow.
I've got a pen for you that I could sell.
I've been blessed
Blessed.
by Vedic Radma or Radam or whatever that
Exactly.
name was. Okay.
O'Brien's at the bar. Quark is talking to him. Quark says, yeah, humans let their women have too much freedom. That's why their marriages fall apart. He goes through all the things that human women are allowed to do that would never happen on Ferengi. But this kind of makes Miles realize, like, wait a minute, I got to do something. Like, in this moment, he's like, I'm not going to let
Yeah.
Kate go.
Yeah. And I have very few scenes. Quark has very few scenes with O'Brien. This is why I just what I was saying about latent relationships. And I really enjoyed this. I really thought, oh, I wish I'd had more scenes with O'Brien, because I really good. And I don't remember it all, but I have to hope that Avery sort of directed us in this scene a little. Again, here's a situation where there's a little eye contact. I'm rarely looking at O'Brien.
Yeah, you're counting the latinum, you're cleaning up. Yeah, you're doing things at the bar.
A lot of business.
All right, next scene is we're in the corridor. Kira's alone looking at the scroll fire, which I thought was very odd. Again, I'm not sure what this festival is. Do you remember this tableau? She's standing in front of a bowl of fire by herself. No one's around her.
Right.
It just seemed odd to me. I couldn't figure out how
she's burning her love letters from Beryl is what
I guess so.
That's what it was.
Well, he walks by, she grabs him, tries to kiss him.
Yeah.
She's really going heavy with the PDA in public in this hallway.
Oh, he wants nothing of that.
Is something wrong? She says. And he goes, no, not at all. No. Do you know where she is though? So he's very obsessed with Dax right now. And then he leaves by saying, I just want to thank you, Kira, for being such a good friend. She's like, friend?
Well, he's probably seen The Defiant, the episode before this one, and he realized
with Riker,
the handwriting on the wall.
Yes.
He's in a screening room watching dailies from the prior episode. Hey, my character's done. I have nothing left.
This romance is going nowhere.
No.
Well, now we go into the wardroom. Dax is setting the table. Sisko shows up for this party they're planning.
Yeah.
She tells Sisko she's trying to avoid Beryl because he won't keep his hands off of her. Sisko says he'll tell Kira. You know, Dax doesn't want to tell Kira, break the news about Beryl, but Sisko says he'll do it. Then Dax sits down next to him, thanks him, says it's for the best because it's always been you, Sisko. She starts to cuddle him and rub his chest. So many awkward pairings.
Sisko does a really good job holding his own though. He's trying to get away from her. He realizes something's happening, so it's okay.
Garrett, if we're ever like at a convention or something and you suddenly lean over and start and cuddling
you.
Me and rubbing my chest,
look for Majel Barrett. Look for Majel Barrett.
Look for Majel. Is she around anywhere? My goodness. Let me just interject real quickly. Costume designer Robert Blackman, Bob Blackman, and composer Dennis McCarthy also loved this episode because of the freedom they got to experiment and try things which they would never have been allowed to try normally. According to Blackman, it was a nice opportunity we hardly ever get. Everybody gets nice dress-up stuff. Similarly, McCarthy enthuses, it gave me the chance to compose a little bit of humorous music. On Star Trek shows, we're normally leery of doing comic music. So some of these, below the line, people had a great time on this episode doing things they couldn't do before.
Well, we come back from a commercial. In the old days, there would have been a commercial. Dax is still rubbing Sisko's chest, sitting in his lap. She's cuddling him, says he smells wonderful. Then she giggles and he starts laughing and he's like, oh, you had me. I thought this, you know, it's all a joke.
Yeah.
And she's like, no, nope, it's not a joke. So Sisko calls Bashir, doctor, meet me in the infirmary. Yeah.
So I have a question for you, Robbie.
Yes. Yes.
Mr. McNeil.
Yes.
How easy or difficult is it when you're directing an episode that you're in? You obviously have a stand-in when you're setting up the shots from the camera.
Yeah.
How do you do that? How do you sit in Video Village and appear on set at the same time? How do you do
can't.
That?
You can't. You watch it. You watch the scene, the technical side of the scene get set up with second team with the stand-ins. Mm. But once you're filming, you either need to have a writer producer there who knows the script as well as you and can give you some thoughts and some notes. Or what I did on Star Trek was I had a Marvin Rush, the DP. I turned to Marvin and just said, hey, Marvin, I need you when I'm acting to keep an eye out. Here's what I want to accomplish. And so I'd let Marvin know, like, I want to make sure that my character you know, switches gears at this moment. I want to make sure that that lands. It's important to see this turn happen. And so I'd ask Marvin to keep an eye out for that. And if he said, yeah, I think you got it, then we'd move on.
Is he okay. the only one? Is he the only crew member that you could have asked to do that? Just the
you
DP?
Couldn't ask Cosmo? I mean, I would assume that Judy Brown might have been involved in this discussion as well on Deep Space Nine.
Judy, script supervisors are really like more continuity technical stuff.
What
Unless
about Jerry
there's a
Fleck?
Description.
What about the first AD?
The
could
first
you
AD?
Ask the first
maybe.
AD to watch
yes,
your performance?
Yes.
Okay.
You could ask the first AD because they prepped with you, so they know the script pretty well.
Yeah.
The best thing to do is to have a writer producer there, which we did not have.
Right. So do you think that Mr. Brooks asked Jonathan West to watch him?
Probably, because I don't remember our writer producers spending much time on our set. So.
Right.
Yeah, it was. He probably collaborated with Jonathan West the most.
Yes. Okay.
But it's up to Avery to say whether he wants feedback on performance or whether he just wants technical feedback. He may
Correct.
He may say.
Yeah.
I don't,
and at this time in the mid 90s, there wasn't the ability to play back immediately and decide whether or not
Correct.
We should do another take or not.
Correct.
Yeah. Yeah. It was film. It wasn't, you'd have to hire another department called video playback. And a lot of feature films have that. Mm-hmm. And when I did the series Las Vegas with James Caan, because James Caan had come from features, he demanded that they have playback for him. So when Jimmy would do a scene, he would go over, as you do on a feature, if you're a star of the movie, he'd go over and ask playback to play it back for him. Even though they shot on film, they also recorded. But that was James Caan. That was because of him.
Right.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And it's an expensive department. You know, you're hiring a couple of people there. So.
Yeah. Because I thought sometimes while watching Avery perform in this episode, get the feeling there's just a little eye outside of his head.
I agree.
Watching what's happening as he's
as a
acting,
director. Yes.
As the director.
Mm. Yeah. I saw that too. Yeah. I saw it in the way he stood, in the way he was sort of watching the actor he was in a scene with. It was like he was watching their performance to see how, as opposed to playing his intention.
Right.
His,
exactly.
You know, his character's experience. Well, Sisko calls Bashir. They go to the infirmary. Bashir says everything. He's run some tests. He says, you know, she looks fine. She looks perfectly normal. Dax in the background kind of laughs. See, I told you so. Bashir and Sisko think it might just be a practical joke. But it's not clear from Dax if it was a joke or not. You can't quite tell in this scene.
Yeah.
And then she grabs Sisko's hand and sort of drags him out. They're still arm in arm on the promenade. Sisko still thinks it's a joke. She's really playing this joke, taking it pretty far. And then she says, well, if I didn't love you so much, you know, I'd be angry at you. And she kisses him and leaves, and he's confused again. We go to the Replimat next. Kira is destroying some kind of decoration on the table. She's pulling apart the streamers or something. Mm-hmm. Jake joins her. She says, leave me alone, which I loved. He's unfazed. He smiles. Not a big scene, but, you know, just resetting their attitudes that Jake is relentless in his love for Kira and that she's miserable from Beryl calling her a friend. Such a good friend.
Oh, yeah.
This is the scene I wanted to look up next, is O'Brien's quarters. When he comes in, he sees Molly playing with her little stuffed alien
little pig,
cow.
Pig.
Yeah.
He makes
is
an
it
oink.
Pig?
Yeah, he makes an oink sound. Yeah.
Well, I love that little stuffed
it
animal.
It says it's a targ. A stuffed
a
targ.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, there you go.
The it's Klingon, you know, dog, basically. So.
Well, he sees Molly. Molly says, Mommy's really sad. And he says, well, why don't you go play in your room? I'm going to go make her feel better. And he goes to see her, but the door is shut. This is what I wanted to look up, and I'm going to find it. I'm going to find it.
Yeah, please do, because I saw that and thought, really? No coverage of Rosalind at all? And I thought, well, maybe she just wasn't there. Maybe he was, you know, Judy was feeding him the lines for Keiko.
Unless it was stylistic. He did it on purpose.
If she was there, and maybe in the editorial process, maybe in order for what comes later, maybe it's just as well not to see her hear that apology and what she thinks of it. so that it's a surprise later.
Okay. What'd you
Well,
find?
in the original script, after the Molly conversation, Molly leaves with her targ. It says, new angle. O'Brien walks over to the closed door of his and Keiko's room. He starts talking through the door. Oh. O'Brien, Keiko, it's me. Can I come in? Keiko, off stage.
Off Not stage.
Now. And her lines are all scripted off stage through the door.
Wow. So it was never meant for her to be seen.
No.
But I wonder, it depends on the day. It's very possible she had more to do that day than just this scene. And that's very possible. But if she didn't, if it was just this scene to do, then they probably would have given her the day off. The script coordinator, Judy Brown, would have said
would have
the
read
lines.
The lines.
And then in ADR, they would have replaced the lines with rosin.
I have a few odd rules as a director. One of them is if a character is holding something and looking at it or talking about it, I always shoot an insert of the thing.
Okay.
Not everybody does. The other rule is if there's a phone call and the other character has more than two lines, shoot it. Shoot the other side of it. Two lines you can get away with. Hey, is he there yet? You hear him say, yeah, he's here. Okay, well, tell him I'm coming over. Okay, bye. That's enough. I could deal with that.
But three but this is, or more, you would.
Yeah, more than two, shoot the other side of it. Anyway, those are odd, weird rules. But this scene, she's got so much. It's far more than two phone call lines.
Correct.
She's got a lot of dialogue and a lot of, whether we see her reaction at the end and know what she's thinking, it would be interesting to me to see the wheels turning and to see her absorbing it and going through some,
yes, and
some
she's
emotions.
Quite capable of doing that without giving anything away.
Yeah. Well, he says the whole thing. He apologizes through a closed door.
And makes an astonishing request or a statement. I'm willing to give up my job and be with you in Bejor.
Oh, yeah. That's
I certainly had forgotten that before I saw it the first time this week. And I thought, wow, that's quite a commitment. That's quite great. A commitment.
Yeah, he said he left a resignation letter. He's done it. He's left the letter at Cisco's desk.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was a big move.
Massive.
But even though it was a big move, it doesn't get her to open the door and come outside. She says, I still need time. I need time to think about this.
Yeah.
So she says, go to Cisco's.
And that's
party.
Realistic. That I went, yeah, that's absolutely right.
Yeah. It's not some quick fix to somebody makes a bold, heroic move and suddenly
she comes out
fine.
And says, oh, I forgive you. I forgive you. Oh my God, that would have been horrible.
Yes.
It's best to say, I need to think about this.
Yeah. It's realistic. You're right. All right. We go to the out to a corridor next. We've got Loxana and Odo with Odo on one side and Bashir on the other side. And the shot is behind them. It is the slowest walking I've ever seen in my life. It is so unrealistic.
And again, I'm thinking, where's the pace? Come on, Avery, where's the pace?
Yeah.
In Midsummer Extreme, there's a great deal of pace.
Yes.
but where's the, and why were they interlinked in arms? What was that about?
Let me see if that's scripted since I have the script pulled up here. The same corridor that Brielle and Kira were in previously. Kira's walking down the corridor when she runs into Odo, Loxana, and Bashir going the other way. That's
it doesn't
all it
say interlinked in arms.
Interlocked arms.
In fact, the way it's described, same corridor where Brielle and Kira were previously. Kira is walking down the corridor. I would have preferred the way it's scripted, that we were with Kira and she's in the, you know, maybe even pauses in the place where she last saw Brielle and then rounds a corner and runs
and
into
there they
her.
Are, yeah.
That would have been more interesting than being on the back of the slowest walkers I've ever seen. Wasn't it? Am I the
yeah,
only
it was
one?
Very slow. No, it was,
it
very
was
slow.
Bizarre.
But it's true what Armin said. Why are they holding each other's arms, right? It's clearly the Xanthi fever. That's what's happening, right? Okay.
So well, now what's happened is now instead of twosomes and we now have threesomes? Is that
clearly?
Is that
no, it's a throuple. There's like. Our throuple.
It's a throuple.
There's our throuple. Yeah.
They see Kira. Kira says, I'm not going to the party. Barile's in love with Dax. I don't want to be there. Bashir says Dax has convinced Sisko that she was in love with him. And he thought it was a joke, but maybe he needs to go back, look at all these tests again. This is too much of a coincidence.
Yeah.
Odo leaves with Loxana, who has another headache, and Bashir's going to head back to the infirmary. But just as Loxana leaves, passes him with a headache. Now he's got a headache. Kira has a headache. She goes with Bashir. We know where this is going.
Oh, yeah.
They both just have a headache. Yeah, and he does say maybe he should examine Beryl and Jake too. So all of these, he's starting to put this together, but it's a little late because he's got a headache now. Yeah.
I
I've
do.
got a headache.
I do feel this kiss is what began their off-camera
You know,
romance. I
I
feel
wanted
this
to
is it.
think that's why I did some research.
Yes.
It's not likely that their relationship started around this episode. It's possible because nobody shared anything with me, but their relationship became obvious to me a couple years later. So it doesn't seem like this is the beginning.
Kira and Bashir walk into the infirmary. Big kiss.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah.
The hands are flying, the kissing's
Oh man.
happening.
Yeah.
We cut back to the wardroom. Basically, this is a farce. This whole scene is a farce with all the couples having their comedy moments. I wrote very Midsummer Night's Dream in here. This scene feels the most Midsummer to me, where you've got Odo irritated by Loxana stalking him. You've got Dax irritated by Beryl getting handsy. You've got Jake telling Sisko he promised Nerys would be here. This is where Sisko goes, "Stop calling her Nerys." Made me laugh. You got Dax pinching Sisko's butt. Sisko calls Bashir. He's not answering. It's just a farce. Everything, it's all spinning out of control. He sends Odo to get Bashir. Loxana follows, of course. In the infirmary, they're still kissing. This is very dynamic kissing, unlike the Brile kissing. It's
I'm sorry. To me, there's spark happening right here.
Yeah, there's sparks happening. I just don't know if it was real or not. It looks real.
Okay, so Odo heads down to the infirmary. The hot date is continuing. Dynamic kissing all around. Odo and Loxana walk in, and Odo insists that Bashir go see Sisko. Bashir very reluctantly ends his athletic kissing.
Athletic kissing, is that what you just
I don't
said?
know how to describe it. It
I
seemed
love
like a
it.
workout what they were doing. It was more than kissing. It was
Hey,
aerobics.
you know what? I'm going to go with whatever you say because you are the Cupid detective. So if you say athletic
True.
kissing, I'm going to
That's
go with
true.
that.
It's true.
Does Renee play Odo dismayed over seeing his true love kissing Bashir? Does he play that in the scene at all?
Little
Because
bit,
there is a
it's
little bit of uncomfortability that he didn't.
no,
No,
but
I very little,
okay,
very
very
little.
little.
Okay.
I think he's playing more like stunned, as I recall, playing
Okay.
more like stunned and uncomfortable as anyone would be with that athletic kissing.
Yes, athletic kissing is very, very uncomfortable.
It's too athletic. I'm sorry.
Just
It
too
is.
much.
It's
You
not
know what?
realistic. It's not
Yeah.
realistic.
Director Avery Brooks gave his evaluation of this episode. I guess it was over the top, but what is over the top after all? If you're having a pint of Guinness and you see the foam pouring over the top, you think, that's great. But in a television episode, there's this concern about action being too large. It all comes down to rhythm and whether a scene has it or not. There you go.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Brooks.
Yeah.
Interesting. We are in the wardroom next. Dax is hiding behind Sisko, although I didn't know that at the beginning. You see, Beryl is just talking to Sisko.
Yeah.
This one I thought was funny a little bit, even though it's stagey and not realistic. You think he's Beryl's talk begging Sisko to let him see Dax, and then suddenly he mentions a bracelet or something, and you see her hand pop up. Hold on. And then I thought that was funny.
It was clever.
It was
It was
clever.
clever.
Yeah.
Yeah, very clever. It
Yeah.
was a bit stagey, but it was clever.
Yeah.
She pops up, wants to see this thing, snatches the bracelet
Can you imagine the contortions that Dax had to do to not be
to
seen
hide
by
behind Avery?
gosh. I know. I like Brile's first comment. His first dialogue is, "Please step aside, Commander. I need to talk to Jadzia." So he's
Yeah.
on a beeline for her.
Yes, well, Bashir and Kira walk in, still athletically kissing. hands flying all over each other's bodies. They cannot stop. Odo is stunned. This is where I think I saw Odo being a little jealous or hurt or something.
I think you're right.
It was this scene more than the other.
Right here. Right here.
I did sort of like, I don't know who came up with this bit, when Majel takes Renee's hands and puts one here and puts one around. She's like, look at all this love. I want that. And she literally puppets his hands.
Oh, yeah.
It's very funny. Miles is sitting alone off in a corner. He doesn't know what Keiko's going to do.
Yeah.
Jake joins him. Jake's heartbroken seeing Bashir and Kira. Miles is just about to give up on love when Keiko enters. She's in the red dress.
The lady in red.
She looked great. Very sweet moment.
Very nice moment. Very nice.
They kind of embrace. I did like the 50-50. When they came together, Avery shot this very symmetrical, beautifully framed 50-50 of them.
Yeah.
And he shot coverage, of course. But I like this, the way this moment was directed and acted. It was nice.
Oh, yeah.
And she thanks him for being willing to resign, but she says, take it back. You should take that letter back. And they kiss, and Keiko says, I love you so much.
Aww.
God bless Rosalind Chow. She is phenomenal.
And off of that beautiful, tender moment, the door opens, and Quark has pudding for everyone.
Bajoran banana pudding.
It's not Bajoran.
It's Idanian.
Idanian
spice pudding.
It's not Idanian. It's something like that. But it's...
I thought there was going to be some reveal that, oh, that's the pudding that everyone ate earlier, and that's why we're all... Because I didn't know anything about Xanthi.
Oh, so you thought it was the pudding. The Idanian pudding.
I thought it was...
That makes sense.
I have no idea.
Like food poisoning.
I mean, I know the headache thing seemed to be started with Majel, but but I don't know. And
come on, it's always Quark's fault. Come on,
exactly. That's why I went to Quark did it.
Yeah.
Yes, Dax does offer Sisko the bracelet that she stole from Brayl. This is when Brayl says he'll fight Sisko for Dax. Punches Sisko. This is another.
Yeah,
very unrealistic moment.
Oh my God! This is why goes back to my question about, you know, somebody watching.
Yes,
because Avery's response to the punch was very Avery, but so wrong. So wrong.
Yes, it was as if like someone had bumped into him or something. But you saw Brayl throw a real solid punch,
right.
And Sisko just sort of.
Superman just didn't flinch.
It just glances off of his chin, basically.
And then Brayl throws a barrage of punches, and Sisko's just going like blocking every one of them, almost smiling as he does it. It was a little ridiculous. It was a little ridiculous.
And let's also remember, Brayl is a man of peace. So it's antithetical completely to his character.
To his character, yes.
Yeah, true.
True. And Quark, your motivation in this scene is to give pudding to everybody. It's over and over again. Pudding. Yes.
Well, if you weren't so generous with your pudding and going over to Lwaxana, then you wouldn't have gotten a headache.
You know, Quark, you give good pudding. You really do.
I do give good pudding.
You give such good pudding that you fall madly in love with Keiko.
Keiko! Woo!
Latent desires?
I don't know.
Ever sees Keiko. No, not to mention she's been off the station for 4 months.
Armin, has Keiko spoken a single word to Quark in any episode so far?
No.
Not even a, hey,
no.
Quark. Not
now
even
the
that.
Midsummer Extreme, this is the first person Quark sees.
Yeah.
Then, okay, that would make sense.
Yeah. Well, Quark asks Keiko to marry him. Sisko and Bashir see this. You can see Sisko and Bashir simultaneously kind of having an aha moment over there. But Miles, then we cut back. Miles grabs Quark by his ears. That's very painful. That's like grabbing somebody by the gonads.
Yes. Yeah.
Quark screams out in pain. Sisko says, take it easy, Miles. He doesn't know what he's doing. And then Sisko and Bashir look over to Lwaxana, and she's like, what are you looking at me for? Xanthi fever. That's why. Yeah,
But
we
she
go to
doesn't
the.
believe it. She doesn't think she has it.
Because only mature betazoids get this disease.
Yeah, she's
She
far
doesn't
too young.
consider herself mature, then, I suppose. That's what it is. Okay.
Yes. Yeah, she just can't be old enough to have. Is it like menopause? Is that the implication that the Xanthi fever is something
Hey, yeah, I
like
like it.
that?
Yeah,
I don't know.
maybe.
Well, her amorous feelings for Odo are the cause of all these projections. The Xanthi fever kind of
Yeah.
projects her feelings for Odo onto people who are in close proximity.
Yeah.
But Bashir, this is where he says there would have to be a pre-existing latent attraction. And then he says, best not to think about it, Captain or Commander.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I wish they had cut that part out, the latent part. I wish it had just been a simple, the first person you see.
And why not? That is Midsummer Night's Dream.
Yeah,
That's the
right?
first person you see. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think Shakespeare's going to sue them for plagiarism. I don't think he's going to sue them.
You
He's
don't
not
think
very
so?
litigious.
He
Yeah.
was actually.
Was he?
Really?
Yeah, he was very litigious.
Oh, I did not
Wow.
know that.
Interesting. He was
Hmm.
involved in many suits.
Wow. I didn't know that either.
Well, talk to Professor Shimerman.
Bashir wants to go meet Kira. Sisko says, maybe you should hold off. Just wait a few days till this Xanthi fever passes, which is
Or
funny.
until 1997.
Yes, or until you get married in a few years.
Yeah.
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 Commander's log happens here. Sisko says, I'm happy to report that Dr. Bashir's diagnosis has proven correct. My son and all the others affected by Mrs. Troy's condition have made full recoveries. And then
Yeah.
we have this sweet goodbye with Loxana and
It is
Odo.
sweet. I mean,
Yeah.
she acknowledges Odo's love of Kira or attraction to Kira and says, like, you know what? If it doesn't work out, I'm always here. Good luck with your relationship. You know, it's nice.
This is a very sweet moment. And is this the first time Odo's been kissed? Like, it's a
I think so.
real
He certainly
kiss.
played it that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He's very affected by that. You can see
Yeah.
he's very moved by her
Renee
honesty.
was probably
Yeah.
looking for something to play in this episode besides discomfort. That
Yeah.
let, you know, there's something, there's something. Okay.
Another goodbye with Keiko and Miles and Molly.
Keiko kisses Miles, and then when the kiss is over, I'm thinking she got lipstick all over his lips and it's still there.
Oh, really? I didn't see it.
Yeah.
Oh, how funny.
Oh,
Yeah.
it's not a lot of red, but his lips are redder than I remember. And I'm going, I think she really did kiss him and he's got the lipstick still on his lips.
Oh, that's funny.
What is your theme, lesson, moral of the episode?
Don't let your desires get you in trouble. Whether it's desire for a person, desire for, you know, sometimes our desires are wanting or
Yeah.
craving something.
Similar to letting it, don't let your emotions rule you as well, right? In a way, because it's
Yeah, I guess in
desires.
this episode, because it's all about amorous love and the athletic kissing and things like that, there's a sense of like wanting, craving, love, affection, attention,
Okay.
relationship. So, yeah,
I like that.
that's it.
Armin, what's your lesson?
Because I was very much taken with the O'Brien part of this story, my theme is the quality of true love is so much more noble than the itch of desire.
Oh, look at that.
I like
I
that a
love
lot.
that. I love that. Mine is beware of engaging in athletic kissing because it will lead to nothing good.
No, it never does.
No.
Or it may lead to a
Sore
baby down the
muscles,
road.
sore
Sore
muscles,
muscles. Sore muscles.
Django.
Yes. It'll lead to
May
sore
lead to
muscles.
a
It
child
may
known
lead
as
to
Django.
Django.
Yeah, it
Yeah,
may
it
lead to
may lead to Django.
Django. All right. Let's go with this Patreon poll theme, lesson moral of this episode, submitted by Tim Newmark. And that theme slash moral slash lesson is writing a script where two actors make out could lead to a child in future
Oh,
seasons.
that's funny.
Hey, the Django one. There
That's
you
funny.
go. Okay. I love it. Nice. Well, yeah. Thanks everyone for tuning in to our recap and discussion of Fascination. This is the end of our podcast. For all of our Patreon patrons, we still got a little bit more. So
Yes, the
join.
episodes get
Yes.
better, ladies and gentlemen. The
Yeah,
episodes get better.
For all of our Patreon patrons, please stay tuned for your bonus material. But for everyone else, first of all, we want to thank Armin for joining us and co-hosting with us yet again. And everyone, please join us next time when we will be recapping and discussing the episode Past Tense Part One with Terry Farrell and also a very special guest, writer Robert Hewitt Wolff himself. Very excited about that.
Thanks, everybody.
Teldor Joy. Teldor Joy.
Teldor
Teldor
Joy.
Joy.